Hello and welcome to yet another episode of the Saxo Market Call podcast. Today it is Tuesday, and that also means that this is going to be an equity episode. And since we are talking equities, it's no big surprise for any of you, I guess, that we have Peter Garnery, not here in the studio, but from home today. Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Hi, John. Good to be here.
As always, it's great to have you here. Peter, today we have a pretty packed agenda, so I think we should just get on with it. We're going to talk a little bit about the Nikkei performance, the Japanese stock index, in the light of the Bank of Japan announcement earlier this morning or this night. And then we're going to talk about NVIDIA and the new Blackwell chip or platform that they just announced. And finally, we're going to look at an interesting case, which is a company called PDD, which is the parent company of the online marketplace Temu, as some of you may have seen in your marketing feeds on your social media. But let's just start sort of in the helicopter. What's the last week been like on the equity markets? Has there been any region, sector, or company that stood out to you that you've had more focus on than other, Peter?
I think we can say that the overall picture has been somewhat muted. I think we are in the global equity market, we are sort of flat if we compare it to where we were a week ago. We have the US equity market slightly higher. It's nothing really major, 0.6%. We have Europe flat with some markets being weak. The Swiss market has been weak. On the other hand, the Spanish market has been strong, up 2.5%. In Asia, it's the same. We have divergence, Nikkei up 3%. And you have the Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 3%. So very mixed picture to say at the least. So I think that's the landscape. And then on countries and regions, if we look at across our theme baskets, we can see in the past week, we've had some pretty strong performance from our commodities-related baskets. Defense as well have been doing quite well. Chinese consumer technology stocks basket been doing quite well. Probably that's a good springboard later to talk about PDD, as you talked about. Mm-hmm. And then some of the worst-performing themes have been some of the other green areas like energy storage companies and renewable energy. Renewable energy have been just really a bad theme. And we had some very bad news again over the past week. LONGi, which is one of the largest solar manufacturers of wafers, etc., solar panels in China, they are reducing their work staff by an incredible amount of thousands of people that are being laid off. There's a lot of pricing pressure, overhang of supply in the solar panel industry. And the wind turbine industry is not really, it's coming slowly back to life, but it's nothing really major then. And also semiconductors, we will talk about NVIDIA, but the semiconductors and AI theme has also had a little bit of a setback over the past week. So that's the highlights.
And that last bit is obviously interesting because that has been one of the themes that's just been running quite heavily last year and this year. But if we just raise ourselves or remove ourselves from the equity markets and look at financial markets broader, like I talked to Charu about yesterday, really this week is all about central bank meetings. We have a lot of them. We've had a few, and we're also going to have more, obviously, with the Fed FOMC meeting being the highlight. But in European times, the night leading up to today, we had the Bank of Japan, which announced a rate hike, which takes them out of negative territory as one of, if not the last central bank around the world. And it's always interesting to follow that kind of things in Japan because of their historic backdrop of their issues with inflation, etc. But I also think just because of that, Peter, it made sense to revisit the Nikkei, the index in Bank of Japan, and see how everything's going there, because it has had a pretty good 2024, up 20% or so. But before 2023, it was more or less flat. But when we look at this rate hike, in financial theory, a rate hike would mean that equity markets aren't really reacting positively. But I think we still see the Nikkei in a small plus right now. It's going around zero. But what's sort of your take on the Nikkei after this announcement from the Bank of Japan?
Well, a lot of the studies that have been done on these interest rate hikes, typically early on in the interest rate hike cycle, there's actually not a negative reaction in the equity market. And that's because the early phase is often predicated on economic growth being strong and the economy can cope with it. Then eventually you hit a point where central banks have raised the policy rate to a level that then begins to slow down the economy and then potentially it slips into a recession. That's typically the cycle. So where we are right now, the rate hike from Japan, it's also a small one, right? It's just moving at 10 basis points. So it's not a major thing here. And the Nikkei had already had a pretty good week, a pretty good run up into this decision, which was a little bit surprised. It was not the consensus. There was a lot of chatter about it, but it was not the consensus by analysts. The Nikkei is surprisingly stable in today's session, and that's despite a pretty big move in the dollar-yen currency pair. I mean, it's up around 1%. We're trading very close now to the resistance levels and highs we had back in February. So I would be surprised. And by the way, we're coming out very soon with our quarterly outlook for the Q2, and we actually have tactically for the second quarter Japanese equities on negative. So we actually expect the Japanese equities to come down. It's a market that has become a lot more expensive and probably the most expensive in a long period against itself. And we think that the Bank of Japan will probably have to do a lot more. Ueda, which is the governor of the Bank of Japan, already highlighted it today in his speech that, you know, more pressure on the yen, so in this case a weakening yen, would force the Bank of Japan to do more intervention and maybe even hike rates more. So I think that was a clue that the market is rallying with and potentially pressuring the Bank of Japan. I think they will be forced to do more, and I think eventually that will mean that the yen will have to strengthen, and that is obviously the key risk for people that have joined the momentum in Japanese equities. So definitely something to be looking after, and I think we'll come back and revisit the Japanese equity story and currency story there. Son, this is not the last time this year that we have talked about Japan.
No, and I think it's something that we are, as you say, going to. Also, I think we promised last week, actually, that we would do a thematic episode about it. So I think we're going to do that after Easter. You kind of stole my thunder in terms of asking what we expect going forward. But as I understand it, you seem to believe that rough times could be ahead of the Nikkei in at least the relatively near future because the Bank of Japan has to do more. Is that correctly understood?
Yeah, so our theme in the quarterly outlook, in our currency outlook, is that the Japan, while all other central banks will likely move into a rate cut cycle with varying speed and degrees, Japan will do the opposite. So they will close the gap from the other side. They're coming from very low interest rates and will have to close the gap. A big partly the short-term robustness of the Japanese equity market is also tied back to this massive wage union negotiation that was taking place in Japan, where they settle on a little bit more than 5% wage hike. That's pretty dramatic when you have a policy rate close to zero and you have government bond yields where they are. So, and with very low inflation expectations in Japan. So I think that they are potentially playing with fire here, the Bank of Japan. But that's a viewpoint that we have had for a long time. And I think it is really the currency risk and the managing of those risks from the Bank of Japan that is the key risk for Japanese equities. But for now, things are holding up, and a lot of the positive trade in Japan is obviously due to, as we've talked about before, Son, that Japan is being seen as one of those countries where you can really move if you have a China plus one or a China plus two strategy. So if you previously had manufacturing in China, then you can move it to Japan. And there was actually quite an interesting headline. I think it was in the Wall Street Journal the other day, where or maybe it was the Financial Times, where TSMC is building two new semiconductor manufacturing plants in the U.S. and they're building one in Japan. The two in the U.S. are already behind schedule; they are delayed, whereas the one in Japan is on schedule. And I think that again, it speaks into why Japan has becoming a favorite hub.
Yeah, and it is super interesting. And just a little bit of a teaser, this week's thematic episode will be with Charu, and it is going to focus on this Bank of Japan rate hike from more of a macro historic perspective. So I hope you want to tune into that. And as you said, Peter, we're going to talk much more about this because Japan seems to be one of the topics that we just talk about here in 2024. But let's leave it for there. Then we have a lot of content coming out about Japan. Then let's move into NVIDIA. They just announced this new Blackwell GPU, which is their new platform or chip or whatever you want to call it, which, according to their press release, can reduce the large language model or generative AI systems, the cost of those with up to 25 times and also the energy consumption. Obviously, NVIDIA has been one of the stories of 2024 and also 2023. It's been increasing a lot. It's more than doubled over the past 6 months, actually. But after this news, we're actually seeing NVIDIA being down a little bit here in the pre-market. What's your interpretation of that? Is the market disappointed by this news, or is it simply because the valuation, as you've said several times, has run so far that it's just where we are now?
How to interpret it? It's, I think the stock price is very much living its own life. There is no doubt that the announcement yesterday from NVIDIA is extremely positive and something that will extend their edge and their lead over the competitors, which is our AMD and others that are coming into the arena. You know, Sam Altman, we've talked about that. The founder of OpenAI is also touting an AI chip venture. I think that, you know, reducing cost, and you say by 25 times, it's a weird language expression that you reduce something and then you talk about 25x. So I'll just say that you know, reducing cost a lot will mean that running applications and creating a lot of new exciting AI systems on top of the foundational models from OpenAI/Microsoft and Google, etc., will prove to be very valuable. It will also probably eventually make it possible for a large consumer technology company like Apple to integrate a lot more features with faster speed to the consumer. The Blackwell is expected to have a 2.5% performance increase when you train an AI model compared to the Hopper system, which is the one that is they're selling now with great success. I think that, you know, no matter how you spin this, it's from a product point of view, it's a positive story for NVIDIA. The stock is down 3%, as you say. There is just that sometimes expectations can be too high, before we went on the podcast, I talked to you, Sean, about this case. I think Tesla, and this is really important, we've talked about this before with you know expectations versus just what the company is delivering, and sometimes the two things can depart too much. And I just want to, when we talk about NVIDIA, point to the case of Tesla, right? So they hit a $1.1 trillion market value in late 2021. As of today, their stock price is down in terms of market value, down 50%. And in that subsequent period, which is a little bit more than 2 years, revenue is up 100% almost. And the net income is up almost 100%. And Tesla is expected to continue growing both this year and by 12.5%, but then increase the growth rate in 2025 to up to 20%. So I think this is a very good lesson and a very good thing to reflect on if you're an NVIDIA shareholder, that we could be in a case where, like, we had $2 trillion market value for NVIDIA. There could be a case that despite enormous progress on the product side, et cetera, that in 3 years from now, NVIDIA stock could be unchanged, it could be a lot higher, it could have fallen a bit, but flat over a three-year period. And in the meantime, the business could have doubled in terms of revenue and profitability. A lot of the unknowns there is to what degree will competition heat up, et cetera, all these things. So it's just, things rarely go up in a straight line forever. And there will be a day where expectations will be too high for NVIDIA to realize those expectations, and then the stock price will begin to reflect that and either move sideways or settle down a little bit. So that's some of the things to look out for. But I think it's impressive to watch NVIDIA and what they're doing, and all that. I think it's a crazy momentum that they're having. And then I want to just briefly, so again, I think this is, we talk in our quarterly outlook, which will be out in early April, our headline on the equities part is called the AI and obesity rally are defying or gravity, or the rally is defying gravity. And it's just interesting to, again, part of coming out of this conference, et cetera, and this news that NVIDIA and the Novo Foundation, which is the parent company of the majority shareholder of Novo Nordisk, which is part of the obesity bonanza that we're seeing with their drug, Wegovy, those two companies are going to collaborate and build an AI supercomputer in Denmark to help create faster research and innovation in drug discovery, life science, etc. So, and also be used for green transition. This is super interesting.
That is super interesting. It's I mean, it's just mastodons putting forces together to see if they can become even greater at what they're doing, and that is definitely, that could at least be very gravity defying. But I guess if in terms of what we expect going forward for NVIDIA, as I listen to you, I mean, as you say, it's living its own life, and if news like this can't really push the price higher, then I guess it's anybody's guess what's happening next with NVIDIA's share price.
It is. I think it's very difficult to predict. But I will say though that, you know, NVIDIA is in a really good position. They, you know, what they really got right was the integration of key libraries for training AI models, integrating that into the chip architecture. So the CUDA platform is really the secret sauce, right? Because, you know, we've talked about before that one of the key assumptions which is embedded in the current market value of NVIDIA, and I'm using the phrase from Athos Damodaran, is that you have to assume a pretty high market share globally for AI chips in the future to justify the valuation of NVIDIA. And as he says in his article on NVIDIA, that has never really happened before. There's never really been a dominant, the winner takes it all dynamic in the semiconductors, because it's been a hardware business. But the integration of AI libraries and the software, the CUDA platform on the GPU architecture itself for the AI chip has really created a powerful moat, because even, and we've talked about this before, I think that, you know, even if Intel or AMD comes out with an AI chip that is like on the hardware itself is faster, etc., and also have a software integration, you, if you're a company like Meta or Google and you have built up a vast ecosystem and training models, and you have all these data scientists, and you have integrated a lot of your code up against the CUDA platform, it's not super easy to just switch to another AI platform just because maybe it's 5% faster. So they've really, really created a strong moat that will be difficult for competitors to break. And maybe this time it is just different. I don't know. It's everyone's guess, as you say, Søren. But all we can say is that their product innovation is pretty breathtaking. Whether they can eventually live up to this these massive expectations, time will tell. There is a physical reality we've talked about before, which I think is one of the key risks to AI, and that is, and it's a, it, there was recently a huge conference in the US around electricity production and electricity consumption, and AI was mentioned together with the green transition as two powerful forces that are gobbling up or pushing up demand for electricity at a breathtaking pace. And it doesn't seem like the pipeline of projects and energy production or electricity production is keeping up. And that eventually could become a problem for, you know, we have to recognize that despite AI is living in a digital world, it is still standing on the foundation of a physical world that actually can deliver the data centers, the electricity to run them, and cheap silicon, you know, for producing chips, etc. There's a lot of physical realities as well to think about.
Yeah, we haven't gone full metaverse yet. I think it's interesting this idea that you mentioned about integration, because it's sort of comparable with the Microsoft Outlook or Microsoft Office packages, right? That I mean, I guess there's a ton of different providers of word processing documents for or processors and etc. But I mean, so many companies are just so integrated with the Microsoft Office that the cost of reverting from that is just so big, and it'll be such a disadvantage for all employees. And you could see NVIDIA being kind of that company just within the integration of AI into other systems. But
absolutely. Yeah.
Peter, let's move on because time is flying here, and I think let's talk about a pretty interesting case, I think, or at least one of the one of the companies that we don't really talk too much about, and it's called PDD Holdings or Pinduoduo for its Chinese branch.
That's at least how I have been told it's pronounced. Okay. Pinduoduo.
Well, that sounds more grown up, so I'll buy that. they're also the parent company of this company called Temu, which is an online marketplace that is sort of making its way into European and Western worlds everywhere, basically. And it has its earnings report on Wednesday. And the reason why it's interesting is that probably a lot of people don't know PDD, but some people may know Temu from their pretty hefty marketing campaigns. Temu is a low-price online marketplace from China. PDD Holdings is a Chinese company listed on NASDAQ in the US, and it has actually taken over the place as the most valuable Chinese company listed in the US, obviously taking that over from Alibaba. And I think that's interesting because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that or even know this company. What's your take on the company generally, or this story maybe rather?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a fascinating company, and the reason why this is important is that a lot of investors, both in the US and Europe, have grown up to believe that Alibaba is sort of the king, and it was the king of e-commerce and the online marketplace in China. And and we can see that in our own client data. A lot of clients are not exposed to PDD, but they are exposed to Alibaba. And I think every time you have an idea that China's growth will stage a comeback or the consumer is improving, you immediately think about, you know, okay, I should buy Tencent or Alibaba. That has increasingly difficult because of a lot of the regulations that have come in China in the private technology sector. But coming back to PDD, why it's such an interesting company with Temu. So a little bit of the insights we got from our Chinese colleagues is that, you know, traditional way, if you want to grow fast, you in the consumer industry, you would target young people because they spread the word faster. So, but apparently what PDD did, which was so smart, is that Alibaba had moved up the value chain over the years to selling branded goods over there, Taobao marketplace, etc. And what PDD did instead was that they exposed manufacturers that were not selling branded goods. So you could get a lot of consumer goods that were like 70 to 90% cheaper than the branded goods. So for ordinary, like it could be toilet paper or smartphone chassis or whatever it was, such an incredible cost saving on Temu. And what they did that was smart, they identified the consumer segment in the Chinese economy that was the most sensitive to price, and that was the elderly. So very early on, they got a lot of elderly on the platform, and then they spread the message to their kids that were grown-ups, and then it picked up. So it's almost in reverse of what you normally would do in terms of just getting things spread fast. And you're correctly saying, Son, we are seeing the inroads of these very direct from manufacturers to the consumer platforms like Shein and Fast Retailing competing with Inditex and H&M. They are, by the way, considering an IPO very soon. I think the London Exchange has been considered as one option to tap into global investors. And then you have Temu, which is more on the, you know, ordinary consumer stuff and not fast retailing. But that, so, and as you say, I mean, if you look at the expectations, so they're coming up with the earnings results very soon. The expectations for 2023 as a whole is 82% revenue growth, Earnings per share growth of 87%. So as you say, it's extraordinary growth rates. 43% growth expected here in 24, 32% bottom line growth rate, and then 32% growth rate yet again in 2025, and almost 30% growth rates on the headline. So incredible high expectations for growth for PDD or Timo. And against that expectation stands the increasing nervousness of politicians, both in the US and Europe, that wants to limit competition from China. We have seen the US moving ahead potentially with a ban of TikTok. We're seeing Europe very seriously considering tariffs on Chinese EVs because of heavy subsidies from the Chinese government. I wouldn't be surprised if platforms like Timu and Shane could Xi'an could be under the same type of pressures in the years to come.
All right, so I think that's just a word of caution. Obviously, this is an interesting case due to the incredible growth that BDD has seen, but it is also expected to grow a lot going forward. So if you want to check it out, check it out, but just be wary of the expectations as well. Peter, that was more or less the script that I had made for today. I want to finish off asking you one thing, and it's sort of just my curiosity, and it's related to stocks in general. You follow much more companies than I do. What would be your like equity story for this week? What's your most interesting case looking at right now?
Well, we have already talked about NVIDIA, so it would be too boring to just mention NVIDIA again, but obviously it is one of those to watch. But I would say that I'm actually looking a little bit forward to the Nike earnings report on Thursday, because this is a company that has built on strength for decades with a relentless focus and almost flawless execution. It seems a little bit like that narrative have seen some cracks lately. The company is definitely not cheap. They have had issues with growing the top line, and there are a lot of overhang of inventory. So compared to previous levels, and they're trying to roll out new strategic price hikes to restore their previous strong margins. There's a lot of focus on Nike, and at the same time on Thursday you have Lululemon, which is sort of the innovative, the new player in this industry, came from yoga pants and now expanding into training shoes, etc. And they have a very, very strong connection with women, and it's such a different positive story. So probably Lululemon versus Nike on Thursday, I think, are sort of the thing to watch in the week ahead, and how the market basically interprets those results and how they price or reprice those two companies.
Good stuff, Peter. Thank you so much. Do you have any final remarks before I conclude this episode? Because we've already talked for...
No, I'm good.
You're good. Then I just want to say thank you so much, Peter, for making us all a little bit smarter today. It's a pleasure as always. And on behalf of Peter Gonnery, the Saxo Market Call Podcast, everybody here at Saxo, my name is Soren Otto. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back anytime soon. And until then, happy trading.